back on Canuck Central. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. We're in the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? And Canucks playoff coverage here on Sports at 650, brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Get your keys to an all-star collection of Kubota products at one of their six locations across BC this spring. Visit DLEAMC.com. All right, it's a Friday, and just because it's a game day doesn't mean it can't be a mailbag Friday, so let's get to it. Hit the music. Sometimes I feel like ravishing Rick Rude when I say hit the music.
Do you? Ravishing Rick Rude. Wow.
It's an old wrestling reference.
Of all the guys, ravishing Rick Rude. I like it.
We're going to start with BB and not Ben Bassran, but another BB.
Okay.
Why is everyone in a panic after just two games?
Because they haven't seen the playoffs in a long time here.
It's, as Jim Mora would say, playoffs! Now, this is a different context, but because it's playoffs, people are definitely living and dying. Small samples rule the day in the playoffs. You can't be like in game two of the 82-game season. It's early! Can't be like Sat trying to talk me off the ledge of the Blue Jays season. It's early!
Yeah, it is still early.
In the playoff series?
No, it's not quite as early, but it's still like it's 1-1.
Yes.
Like, I do think it's a 1-1 series. There does not need to be massive amounts of panic at the moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think, you know,
it's
all right. It's still early. Now, to me, it's like after game four.
Yeah.
If you're 2-2, whatever. If you're 3-1, then you're in trouble.
Then it's really
tough. I'm not even sure tonight's this biggest swing game, because it's 2-1, right? Sure, yeah. You want to win, but if you lose tonight and win game four and it's 2-2, you know, like it's, and I'm not saying that's going to happen. All I'm saying is, it's still early in the series, especially because it's 1-1.
It has tended to be a swing game over time. I think the number is like 60-some-odd percent of teams that win game three in a 1-1 series go on to win.
But remember what I said yesterday.
Yeah.
Different biospheres.
Different biospheres. Did you hear Rick talk it today?
What did he say? On which part?
Where he said... I don't like roller coasters.
Oh, yeah, that part was
But he meant mental roller coasters, not like literal roller coasters.
He didn't mean, he meant like as in,
I don't like the mental roller coaster of living and dying with every loss.
Yeah.
The playoffs fans, in the Canadian market, that is a roller coaster.
Fans are going to do that.
That's
right?
Fine. Fans can do that. You know, you're allowed to do that. And even, you know, broadcasters can do that if you want to.
But it's just, to Sat's point earlier in the show, like him not making any drastic changes to the lineup, I think shows that it's a level of stability.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be a roller coaster yet. Moving on from Hayden, do the Canucks realistically have a chance to have a deep run without Demko, or is it just a matter of time here?
So,
I mean, the easy thing to say would be it's only a matter of time.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to win a Stanley Cup, I don't think, without Demko.
Chances are no.
Right?
There's not a lot of...
Probably not. Like, is it impossible? I mean, no, because it's happened before where, you know, things have happened, right? Like, who knows? Maybe Shilovs comes in and he does steal the show one of these
days. But how many people would have said, Vegas isn't winning any cup with Aiden Hill as their goalie?
A lot of people said that.
Like, Aiden Hill was, like, their fifth on the depth chart at the start of last season.
True. Now, are the Canucks, like, last year, Vegas, at the end of the season, roster-wise, had the best roster in the league, right?
Yeah.
Do the Canucks have the best roster in the league?
No.
So I think that's therein lies the rub. The way the Canucks are built, and not to say it's anything
wrong.
They
have maybe a top 10 roster in the league.
Yeah, but they're not like the top one or two rosters in the league, right? Especially if you take Demko out of it.
Yeah.
So I think that's the difference here. It's like, you know, they're not built to rely on goaltending, but they're built to have an edge with goaltending.
Yes.
And when that edge isn't there, because the rest of the roster is really good, but maybe not quite as elite as some other teams, then it makes it very difficult for you to go on a prolonged run. That doesn't mean you can't beat Nashville. Hell, it doesn't even mean you can't win in the second round. Like, who knows? Like, with the goaltending you're seeing between the Kings and the Oilers... Right? Like, I'm not saying. I'm just saying.
Or the Jets and the Avs.
Glass half full. Like, I get it. Casey DeSmith wouldn't be high on the power rankings of goalies in the Western Conference right now. But it's not like there's any... Hellebuck, yes. He's going to win the Vezina. But he hasn't been playing like it.
Yeah.
Jake Ottinger hasn't been playing like it. So far, like, Logan Thompson is the best goalie in the Western Conference playoff. And he hasn't even had to do much. So it's not as though there's one team with great goaltending right now.
No, not elite goaltending.
Yeah. There's some good names, but nobody's actually playing well. You go into a second-round series with Edmonton, yeah, if you don't have Thatcher Demko, you're going to be a considerable underdog in that series. But, you know, the Canucks did beat Edmonton twice with Casey DeSmith in goal this year. So
I'm going to combine two submissions here. Are there any examples of goalies that have multiple knee injuries that have had successful careers? And is it maybe time to start thinking about moving on from Thatcher Demko, given his injury history, in a potential Corey Schneider-like trade, just because we've seen this movie a couple times now, and would Seelovs in your mind be ready? So a lot of pieces there, but kind of all related.
So as far as the injury question goes, I'm not going to lie to anybody. I don't have that in-depth of knowledge of injuries to goalies to know the answer to that. Goalies do deal with a lot, especially ones that play a ton in today's day and age with the amount of movement. And, you know, we talk to Woodley all the time about this, how much stress there is on their joints, their hips, their knees, their groins. They just go through pretty much a war every single night. So, yeah, it's always going to be tough when a goalie starts to rack up, you know, a bit of a track record of injuries. I think it's still, for me, it's too far out to say yes or no. But I've always been of the mindset that you shouldn't be already locked into giving Thatcher Demko a new contract once this current one expires. And I this injury doesn't change that for me.
Yeah, I think it was always going to be a bit dicey, especially if you look at what Hellebuck signed for, and it's going to be through his 30s. Mm-hmm. Massive number. Even if Demko can't demand the same, what, yeah, $8 million per year, still, we're still talking about more than what Markstrom got.
Yep.
He's going to want at least 7+, I would imagine.
It's so hard with goalies. Like, injuries are not. Bobrovsky has bounced back, but that looked like the worst contract in the league for a little bit. He started to play better in these last couple of years. Ilya Sorokin. It's not like he's that old. But they gave him an 8-year contract at $8 million per, and it's like, this guy can't play playoff games for us.
No, it's problematic.
You know, so,
and he was considered like the best goalie in the league, maybe, as soon as last. And
he had
so
stretches
volatile
this season where he was the best. This season where he was the best goalie in the league.
Hey, even Vasilevsky, like, he wasn't quite the same level this year. Now he's coming off an injury too. Yeah. He's been very consistent, generally speaking. But it's a volatile position, like, you know. So it's a very difficult position to overcommit to. You have to be careful no matter what. But I don't think, you know, he's getting $8.5 million to be in Vancouver. Like, I just don't know if that's going to happen the way Hellebuck got, right?
Yeah.
And I think for Demko, is it maybe a little unfair, the injury-prone stuff? Because we're not talking about every single year, right? This one is a really inopportune time he got injured. And like Woodley mentioned to us, this injury, it's kind of it's related to his previous injury. It's not like a brand new injury he got and he's fully healthy. Like, it's still related to the same one.
It's a different injury to the same knee, but from what Woodley told us on Wednesday, and you can go back and listen to it on the podcast, you can kind of surmise that the feeling is maybe there was extra stress put on this part of the knee because of the recent injury.
Yeah. So it's something related to what happened before, most likely, right?
Sort of like anything. You get any kind of an injury, another part of your body is compensating to, you know, try and mask what happened in that other area to get through your current situation.
So this is the second time he's been hurt, right?
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, the 35 games, that was the North Division year, him and Holtby kind of split the duties. He took over that job as the year went on, right? He played 64 games in 21-22. Mm-hmm. And then he got injured towards the end, I suppose, right? Which affected him heading to last season. And, you know, he was still dealing with that injury.
Had to have a procedure before last season.
Yeah, but it was still the same stuff, right? And now it's the second one. So is it fair to say he's injury prone? Whether that's the case or not, how comfortable are you paying him $8.5 million per year long term into his 30s? That's a question. The other part of the question was Arthur Shilov's. I think we all have to pump the brakes. Now, hey, unless he steps in somehow here and shows he can be the guy, I just think there's a lot of getting ahead of ourselves on Shelov. I like him, and I think he should fight for the job next year to be a backup. But I don't think he's ready to be the number one. And even the way he played, like, I don't think, because people also were pointing to, hey, look at what Pittsburgh did with Matt Murray.
Yeah.
And, you know, they let him take over. He only played 13 games that year, and then he played 21 in the playoffs when they went on that run. But if you look at his numbers in the AHL, 930 save percentage, 941 save percentage. He was, like, crushing it in the AHL.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Shelov has been poor. He hasn't been. But we're not talking about a guy who's been one of the best goalies in the AHL.
He had tough stretches in the AHL this year.
And hey, he's still a promising career and everything, but I think people need to pump the brakes on how high his current ceiling is and how ready he is to play a role like that.
That kind of leads into the next question from Wes, which is, if there is a doubt about getting past Nashville due to goaltending, should they consider taking the opportunity to play Shelov, you know, to give him playoff experience? If he is going to be the backup for next year, why not give him the opportunity?
You're not giving Shelov a game for experience. Let's say you go down 3-1 in the series and DeSmith hasn't been playing well. You're going to Shelov because it's your last hope. It's your Hail Mary. You have no confidence left in DeSmith. It's, you know, similar to being in an elimination spot in a baseball series. And it's like, well, we've got Max Scherzer available for one inning, even though he pitched the other day. You know what? We're putting Max Scherzer in for one inning because we need to stay alive. So there is no tomorrow if we don't use Max Scherzer in the spot. Like, I don't think you're thinking about giving Shelov's playoff experience. I think you're thinking more so about, does this give us the best opportunity to survive? That should be your only mindset.
Yeah,
in postseason.
I don't think they have a mindset at all of like, well, yeah, hey, we're not gonna go far anyways without Demko. May as well give this guy a start.
Yeah.
I think the only time you think that is if you're down 3-0 or something. You're like, you know what, we're down 3-0. Hey, may as well get him in here and see what he can do. But I as much as I think DeSmith clearly is the guy, it's a huge game. It's a huge game for him here.
Yes.
Like, I don't think it's, you know, like two starts.
Yeah,
sure.
As much as I don't think he was the issue in game two, like, you have another night where you give up 3 goals on 15 shots.
Yeah.
Your leash is only going to be so long. You know what I'm saying? They would have to be absolutely no doubt about it. You had no opportunity to make these saves in order for them to continue having confidence in Casey DeSmith if he has another night where his save percentage looks less than good.
Moving to the players that are going to play in front of the goalie, how best is it, says Spoonman, for the Canucks to get pucks through the Predators' small box-style defense when they're fronting?
So, as we talked about with Bick in the roundtable, you can find that on podcast as well, in a longer version of this. For me, it comes down to a few things. Most importantly, it's execution, because they did create some opportunities that they could not finish in game two. But apart from that, it's changing your angles in the offensive zone so that they can't as easily just stack up and front your players that are trying to give the layered screens that the Canucks have been so using as prominently as they have this season. And the other major factor, you got to move the puck quicker in the offensive zone. Like, there can't be as much hesitation as we saw through parts of game two.
No, and I think one thing I want to see more of, too, is have that low to high play. Mm-hmm. And that's getting behind the goal line a little bit, and that gets the cycle going a little bit. And we see a lot from them going from the points to the side, to the half wall, or perhaps going down to the goal line. Get past the goal line then. If you're going to throw it down to that guy on the flank by the goal line, just have him go deeper and see if you can get one of those low to high plays. And if that defense starts collapsing down, then maybe the forwards up front, or the defenseman even, somebody, the weak side D, can crash down. Maybe you can get somebody on a backdoor play, or get somebody coming into space downhill that can attack a low to high pass. And those are a little wrinkles I'd like to see. But like we spoke to Bick about, and you mentioned, I don't think you need to reinvent the wheel. You know, like, you need to do things differently. And part of it too, man, it's when you have a shot, take it. The hesitation, it's the big part of the issue was how much they hesitated on getting shots off, or made the wrong decision on a pass or a shot once they had the opportunity.
Well, maybe put a little bit more into the shots too.
Yeah.
Look, the Canucks, they're looking more, generally the reason they don't take huge clappers from the point, I mean, it takes longer to load up a clapper.
Well, they're playing for tips, too.
They're not as accurate, right? So why they are usually wristing it from the point. It's because it's easier to change your angle. It's easier to make it pinpoint where you're shooting for a stick rather than just like hammering it like you're Sheldon Surrey in his prime, just like throwing bombs from the point and trying to score 20 plus goals a season. That's not the biggest thing that the Canucks are attempting here. It is, you know, they're shooting for sticks, they're shooting for tips, they're looking for those kinds of things. But as Rick Tocchet said yesterday, maybe we got to tee it up a little bit more.
Well, you have those opportunities sometimes. You just got to do it. And, you know, you can't also completely abandon everything you were doing last game and try to do something completely different either.
And if you injure an opposing player momentarily, make sure to attack that space. Like, you...
It's the playoffs. Be relentless.
If that player's down, like, if a defender breaks his stick blocking a shot, what do you immediately do? You go and attack that defender because... they aren't as good as defending without a stick.
Right.
Right. If Ryan McDonagh gets hurt because he blocked a shot and his right leg is just like not working for a minute, go.
That's part of it, though.
Get after it.
You want to make
What are you
pay.
Waiting for?
One guy we know who does have quite the shot on him and we've yet to see it be released is Vasily Podkolzin. Ramon wants to know, when could we see Podkolzin play? Or if we will.
I think we will see him play. The funny thing is, I don't think he wants to put the blame on anybody after last game either, the head coach.
Yeah.
Like, Juleson's coming out because Myers is coming back in, right? I mean, that's an obvious one. But I wouldn't be shocked that even game four, if the Canucks take the 2-1 lead here, that we see Podkolzin in game four.
Yeah.
Like, wouldn't shock me.
I wouldn't be all that surprised either.
If the Canucks win tonight?
Yeah.
Yeah, why if they win?
Because I just think when there's less pressure in terms of putting this player into a situation where you're down 1-2 now go play your first game where you can't make a mistake. You go up 2-1, and if, say, PDG just didn't move the needle much or whatever, or let's say somebody else really struggled and they feel like they need more of a push, I could see them putting him into that game. And it's just a safer environment for him as opposed to coming in when you're down 2-1 and you're really worried about making mistakes.
I don't think... Phil DiGiuseppe has had a bad series, but again, it just comes down to, do you think Podkolzin can have more of an effect on the game in some way? And to this point, like, I wonder if how much Nils Höglander has struggled in his first two career playoff games, does that make you think twice about putting Podkolzin in because he's yet to play in the play? Now, I know he's got to play at some point, but... can you afford to have two guys maybe, you know, having deer in headlights kind of moments as rookies in the NHL playoffs?
Something did shift, though, right? Because towards the end of the year, it was very clear from the deployment that Tocchet preferred Podkolzin over the other guys.
Yeah.
Because he played him. He played over 10, 12 minutes.
Played him a lot.
A lot. But then the last couple of games, he struggled. Remember the last two games? He wasn't great in Calgary. Wasn't great in Winnipeg. Even that Edmonton game, he had some moments. He had some good ones, but also not great moments. I wonder if those final few games where his game slipped... concern the head coach, because I mean, up until that point, like, he was very clearly the preferred option.
He seemed to have won the 12th forward job.
Yeah, he had it, like, because I mean, PDG went like games without playing.
PDG hardly played towards the last third of the season. Even after he came back from the injury, he was more out of the lineup than he was in. At least it felt that way.
Yeah,
and just hasn't been that way in the playoffs. Sometimes coaches lean on their veterans, and I can't say that DiGiuseppe has done anything to take himself out of the lineup. It's going to have to be whether or not Podkolzin is showing well enough to get back in.
Chris has an interesting submission here, and I'm going to put my own little spin on it. He asks, what star would be a perfect fit for this Canucks team that would get us to the Cup? Any trade scenarios? And my spin is, after watching the first two games in the playoffs, is there some hesitancy about, maybe they should have done something more at the trade deadline? What are they missing, and what would you have liked to see?
So, if we are unlimited as to which superstar, then the easy answer is Connor McDavid.
Yes.
Nikita Kucherov would be a great fit.
I don't mind Kucherov.
Yeah,
be nice.
He'd be okay. It would help out the Canucks on the wing. Kucherov and Pettersson would look pretty good together, I think.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, more realistically speaking...
What could have been done? Could have been done maybe at the deadline.
Toffoli is the only one.
Yeah.
And Toffoli became hard because the Canucks didn't have a second. The only way you could have done Toffoli was if you didn't do Lindholm and then you traded a first for him, and a first would have been more than what Winnipeg got. They got a second and a third, right? So I don't think there was, you know, unless you wanted to trade one of your better prospects, right? Yeah. And Gensel, even if they didn't make the Lindholm trade, I don't think they would were able to get Gensel. Now, one thing I would have liked to see, and I mentioned I was shocked the Canucks didn't make an addition, even if you couldn't get those guys, I mean, you saw Jason Zucker so far in this series. Would he have been a guy that at least he can play?
But even
six?
Zucker, they couldn't...
No, they couldn't make a cap work unless you move some money out.
Couldn't make the cap work, and Arizona prioritized getting somebody to take his full cap charge off their books. Not
getting the assets
retaining
back
or anything like that. It was just like, we want the full cap charge off the books.
Save the money.
And Nashville was able to do that.
Yeah, so I mean, I would have been nice for them to add another forward that can play up top for them. In terms of adding somebody, I think this offseason, Jake Gensel, you keep looking at him. I mean, you know, we'll see what they do with Besser and everything, but if they don't keep Besser long term, do you consider making a run at Jake Gensel?
They need to add another big time winger, right? You're probably not keeping Lindholm, but you've got Besser for Miller. You've got to find somebody for Pettersson. As good as Höglander was this year, I think, you know, we're kind of seeing what Höglander is as a player, and he's got some great tools, some great attributes, but is he a guy that truly is able to play drive in top 6 minutes in the biggest moments of the season, like right now? I mean, there's still some question marks there. So you'd like to have more of a sure thing next to Elias Pettersson for the start of next season.
With health considerations in mind currently, is winning around this playoffs success for the season?
I mean, to me, if you win a round, especially with Demko being out, I would deem it as a success for this year.
It's hard to deter from how much success they had during the regular season. You know, not just winning the Pacific Division, but also getting Elias Pettersson down to an 8-year contract. Huge win for the team.
But, although not everybody feels the same way about that right now, if you ask them.
I know I've been critical of Pettersson, but I'm not an idiot. So those things are huge successes that you can't take away from this team. But it would be very disappointing for them to do at least not win a round after they gave up a first-round pick to acquire Elias Lindholm. All right, that'll do it for the mailbag. It's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah, producer Ben Bassrin, getting the questions in here on Canuck Central. We're going to get into a pre-game show after 3 o'clock. You'll hear from Rick Tocchet, his full 8 minutes from the morning skate, what he had to say, some of the adjustments the Canucks are looking to make.
We'll get hyped for the game.
Yes.
Because, you know, it's going to be a lot of pacing, at least for me, because I'm going to be here till 10 p.m. tonight.
Get your spros going.
Get ready. Get hyped.
Sat's here for a while. You're going to have to keep him up with all your post-game calls, so make sure you do that.
Have some good takes. Have a take, don't suck.
And some bad ones. We like those too.
Well, sometimes. Depends. Although, like, it's funny, when there's a really bad take, you get a lot of people texting in and be like, this is why you shouldn't take haulers, and others being like, this is great entertainment.
Yes.
But, you know, so it depends on, you know, what type, where you are on that kind of spectrum.
The pre-game show is next on Canuck Central.